Pedestrian safety should be a major consideration when transportation corridors are being built. But for decades, roads and highways were designed to create speedy and efficient movement of vehicles, not people on foot or on a bicycle. As understanding grows of the health, safety, and community benefits from creating walk and bike routes, city planners and traffic engineers are getting better at designing for the safety of all users. Anchorage has had a lethal stretch of pedestrian deaths in recent months. We'll discuss what's being done to lower these tragedies today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Decades of building mega highways to cross the country and slice through neighborhoods has had the unintended consequence of more noise, air pollution, danger, and division for communities. Vehicles have also gotten larger, taller, and heavier. Bad news for people on foot or bikes. But numerous U.S. cities are taking measures to reconnect neighbors that have been divided by highways by creating more sidewalks, bike lanes, and green spaces. People are encouraged to walk or bike to alleviate traffic congestion, pollution, improve health, and connect with neighbors. It's a big shift in thinking and planning for many. But for bicycle commuters and pedestrians, it can't happen fast enough. 14 pedestrians have died on roads in Anchorage this year, a number that is normally the average for the entire state. What are state and city traffic officials working on to make Alaska roadways safer? Here to help us better understand why these fatalities happen and how they can be prevented is Anna Boson. Anna is the state traffic and safety engineer for the Central Region of Alaska with the Department of Transportation. Brad Coy is Anchorage's traffic engineer. And also in the studio today is Alexa Dobson. Alexa is the Executive Director of Bike Anchorage. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
So good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. You can also join us, Alaskans. Are you a bike commuter, avid walker, or someone with mobility challenges that wants safer transit routes through your community? Do you think pedestrians and bicycles should have equal consideration when roads are being designed? Have you seen examples of walkable communities that get it right? Brad and Anna, I want to start with you. You guys get the really tough Alaskan award this morning for biking in here in single-digit temperatures to the station. Start us with an overview of what's been learned after this terrible number of pedestrian deaths in Anchorage this year. 14, as I mentioned in the open, is usually the statewide average. What areas of Anchorage are the most concerning?
Well, thanks for having us talk about this really important topic. This is an opportunity for us to reach a wider audience and to really have a dialogue with the community about this issue, because it really will take all of us stepping up and looking out for each other across our communities. We, as agencies, have been collaborating really before this made the news in September. Back in May, really, we started to meet with APD and the municipality staff and our federal funding partner at AMATS, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, on site to some of these fatal crashes of non-motorized users to learn more about the contributing factors of these crashes. We're also using a number of plans that have studied the data across the city to get comprehensive look at where the issues are and see what we can do in the near term, the midterm, and long term. And so some of our plans do prioritize safety treatments across the city. And you'll find most of them are on state roads. The city has a few roads, too, that are high-speed, multi-lane roads going through neighborhoods or through the community to offer vehicular speed, but they also have contributing factors like the land use adjacent to it has transit, it has businesses, it has a community need where people are traveling on foot or bicycle or transit, and so we should be expecting pedestrians in those areas. Mm. And so there's that mix of speed, vehicles, long crossing distances, long distance between signalized intersections. Those are some of the common threads throughout all of this.
And Brad, maybe you want to pick it up there. Are there, I imagine there are, areas of greater concern in Anchorage than, are there concentrations of where these fatalities or accidents are happening?
I would say that Midtown has quite a few where you have more wider roads and not as much connectivity with some of your lower volume streets. So Midtown has quite a few on there. As you look at them, you know, Minnesota and Northern Lights, A Street, you have kind of in that area. So really where the high volume, high speed roads, it's less about the part of town and more about the type of road that that they are. I would also say many instances, it's when the sidewalk is right adjacent to the street, so there's not kind of a buffer distance either there for both protecting the pedestrian, but also giving ample space to have some of that separation between the modes.
Mm-hmm. Alexa, I want to get you in here now. You talked in an earlier interview about the overall problem on Anchorage streets for pedestrians, cyclists, and drivers. What, talk a little bit about what you see that really concerns you in this regard.
Yeah, I think that the most important thing that we need to keep in mind when we're looking at road safety and how roads are used is that roads are not for cars, they are for people. And people are going to show up in all sorts of modes. We might be in a car, we might be on a bike, we might be on foot, and we might be taking transit. And that could be the same person, you know, getting different places in different ways. So we want to see that flexibility, and we want to see that a road is safe to drive on. It's also safe to cross the street. It's also safe to bike along a street. So we like to think about the ways that people can get around safely and really prioritizing that, even if it means, you know, we have to slow down a little bit, we have to pay a little bit closer attention. That's okay, because it's more important that people are getting where they need to go and they're arriving alive.
Yes. You mentioned road diets, making car lanes more narrow. Why that? I was surprised by that because I feel like the roadways are too close to the sidewalks now and everything seems too narrow to me. I'm nervous when I'm on foot or in a car along some of those areas. So talk a little bit about what's the idea there with road diets.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, road diets could actually address the issue that you're talking about right now. So the idea is that when we have a road that is wider than it needs to be, we have more lanes than we have, you know, traffic that really needs to get through there. And if we have really wide roads that are really straight with really broad, clear sight lines, those are all indicators to a driver that you can go faster, right? It feels more comfortable to drive at a faster speed because you don't feel like you're being obstructed, right? So it's a little bit counterintuitive, but if you make it a little bit narrower, then it actually does cause people to slow down and pay more attention and drive a little bit more carefully. And the other advantage of that is that if we take one of those lanes that isn't really necessary for moving traffic, and we reconfigure the road, then we have extra space that can then become a bike lane, it can become snow storage, it can become a wider sidewalk or a buffer for sidewalks. So it can actually change the feeling of the road and make it safer both for people in cars and people outside of cars. And I know that we have some ideas for that coming up in the future. I'd love to have Brad or Anna talk a little bit about some of the ways that we're gonna look to implement some reconfigurations coming up.
What about for city buses? How would that work for them? The roadways were narrower.
I think that is something I would also want to let the engineers talk more about.
All right, engineers, let's hear about your thoughts on narrower roadways and how that can change traffic dynamics.
Backing up just a little bit, as we look at building our infrastructure, because projects take a while to come to fruition and then they're intended to last 20, 30 years, we are looking typically the approach has been plan out for 50 or for 30 years, right? Let's estimate what the traffic's going to be in 30 years and let's build a road for volumes in 30 years. Well, if you look at how traffic trends have been in the last 10 years, they've been flat or they've been going down. And so a lot of our roads were built assuming we were going to have maybe 20% more traffic on them than we have, or maybe even more. And so the road diet is stopping and saying, man, we built these huge roads. We have to now pay to fill potholes. We have speeding issues. We don't have the facilities for other users. So we need to right size it, so to speak. And some of those locations that don't need 5 lanes or 6 lanes or 7 lanes, let's narrow it. Or even those that are 4 lanes, we can narrow to 3 lanes, kind of like what happened with Spinard Road, and what there's some projects going on Spinard Road, and there's many other places around Anchorage where we don't need it for capacity. Even the protected bike lane over the summer, we took a lane out of A Street, lane of 6th Avenue, because capacity-wise, those were lanes that were maybe making it more comfortable for a driver, but they had other implications for all the other users and resulted in higher speeds. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk road diet, it's another way to talk about it is reallocation of the space to some of these other users.
Okay, so what you're talking about is less room for so many cars and more room for pedestrians or people in wheelchairs and other modes of transportation.
And I'll give you an example of exactly what Brad was mentioning. A Street, when it was built as a couplet, they projected that Anchorage is going to have a population of 1 million people and that we were going to need rapid bus transit. We were going to have a dedicated transit route on that road. And that was the justification, along with some other, you know, user groups, but to build that facility. And so that cross-section is almost 60 feet across, and there's not a signalized crosswalk between Fireweed and 9th Avenue. And so we have some desirable facilities along that route, too. We have the Chester Creek Trail Network, and we have housing, we have a ball field, we have transit routes on one side, and, you know, we're asking a lot of people outside of cars to navigate that. And like Brad said, do we need that? We never had that population growth. We never had the trend for the traffic volumes. And so, and I think everyone can recognize when you're driving, and I'm a driver, you know, I own a pickup truck, so no judgment here, but we can tell when people are being aggressive around us, that impatience and the weaving that happens when you have more than 2 lanes, people are traveling around you and then swerving in and out. Those are dangerous behaviors for anybody, whether you're in a car or outside of a car. And so the protected bike lane project that Brad mentioned downtown had benefits beyond just bikers. It had separation for people walking along the street that before you were elbow distance away from freight vehicles, double tankers. You were elbow away from those aggressive drivers. And is that what we need in our downtown?
Well, especially when too often I'm on the trails every night or on the neighborhood streets or on the trails with my dog every night. We go out for miles. And so often I see people driving down the street looking at their phone, never see us, don't look up once when they go by us. And so that idea of distracted drivers in very narrow areas between someone walking or on a bicycle and a car is definitely of concern. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about safety on roadways, pedestrian, bikes, people with mobility challenges in wheelchairs or other modes of transportation. In the studio with me today is Anna Boson. Anna is the state traffic and safety engineer for the Central Region for the Department of Transportation. Brad Coy is the Anchorage traffic engineer, and Alexa Dobson is the executive director of Bike Anchorage. So how does Anchorage compare to other winter cities of a similar size for bikeability and walkability? Alexa, have you explored that at all, looked at other winter-type cities?
Yeah, so this was the first year that I was able to attend a conference called the Winter Cycling Congress. And it's an international get-together of representatives from winter cities, and it was hosted in Edmonton in Canada. And that was a really great opportunity to get to see what a bunch of different cities all over the world are doing. So there were examples from Finland, there were examples from Montreal, there were examples from Minneapolis. There are a lot of cities that are, you know, really doing a great job of establishing winter infrastructure. And the big keys that I pulled out of those presentations were, A, that the facilities were being designed with winter maintenance in mind, right? So when we have on-street protected bike lanes that are being built in places like Montreal, they know that the plows are 8 feet wide, so they build those bike lanes to accommodate the plows. Then we don't wind up with this problem of having a facility that we can't maintain year-round, things like that. And then making the maintenance a really high priority. You know, when we were hearing from the head of Public Works in Edmonton, she said that when they started on that project, she would be out there with a shovel herself, the head of that department, clearing bike lanes, you know, really making it a priority. So when you can both treat it as something that is extremely important, the way that we do, you know, clearing roads for drivers, and when we build facilities that make it possible to maintain them year round, that's where we see that success.
And are there cities that you really can hold up as good examples of this?
You know, Montreal really sticks in my mind. That was a really cool one. We saw some amazing infrastructure right in Edmonton. The way that they set up their protected bike lanes is really interesting. They use essentially like a curb, but it's wide enough that it can also be used as snow storage. So yeah, there's a lot of inspiration to be had in a lot of different places. I think that Anchorage is going to have, you know, the opportunity to kind of pick and choose from different places what makes the most sense and what works for us specifically. But we have a really broad community of winter cycling meccas around the world, and we should learn from them.
We've had the last two winters, as you all well know, were pretty brutal when it came to amounts of snow and bad roadways. Here we are, it's November, but already sidewalks in neighborhoods are just gone. There's snow plowed up over them. And I think of people that are struggling mobility-wise every time I go out the door. And you know, walking down the street isn't ideal, but I can be as safe as possible. But with somebody in a wheelchair, it seems like we've got to figure out how to do this much quicker so that people can get around that just can't walk out the door on their own. Anna, is there research that shows whether or not speed or distracted driving causes more accidents? Can you tease out that information?
So we do have some data from this 2024 year of fatal crashes. So in Anchorage here for pedestrians, 40% of the drivers were impaired.
40%?
38%, yeah. We are waiting for additional toxicology results. Tinted windows on the vehicles, on the two front windows of the vehicle, 38% also. And where that comes into mind is, you know, if you have more than 30% tint on your front windows, which is the legal limit, then that is therefore cutting off your peripheral, especially at night. And so one officer shared with us that when they were on details, they had tinted windows for undercover exercises, but he even felt that he had to roll down the windows when he's driving in order to be able to see pedestrians. And that goes also to the discussion where we ask pedestrians to make eye contact.
Yes.
We ask pedestrians to use the crosswalk, and yet that might not feel very comfortable. When you have those kind of scenarios of a tinted window, a big vehicle, and they're sitting on top of the crosswalk turning right on red.
Yeah, and you can't see if the driver sees you because you can't make eye contact in that right. setting.
The other thing you asked about was speeding. 30% of the drivers were going 10% or more over the posted speed limit. And so speeding is a contributing factor. And when you talk about the physics of it, you know, speed is squared in terms of the force that happens. And so then you add the mass of the vehicles, and that is really what is the baseline for a minor injury to a fatal crash.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the information that you'd sent earlier. The rate of speed, as you said, is such a huge factor. The difference in rates of drivers yielding to pedestrians at different speeds And the survivability drops dramatically, of course, as speeds increase. When you're trying to help people understand the importance of slowing down, do you cite these numbers? And are people surprised by the extreme lethality of extra speed? It's like, I think the rate was 75% at 20 miles an hour survive, 17% at 37 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, we can share statistics with people, and I think that's helpful in backing up where we go as policymakers and in the design of the infrastructure. But we are also all human beings, and we make decisions every day when we get behind the wheel on how we're going to drive. And that's, like you said, the distraction, et cetera. What I think is imperative is to make a call to people to realize that none of these drivers expected to hit somebody. No one's out there thinking that they are going to hit somebody. And so we're all kind of overconfident in our driving ability. Mm. And so the speed, if we lower the speed, we improve your opportunity to react. We improve the distance. We shorten that distance of reaction time for your vehicle. We open up your visual ability. When you're going fast, you have a much narrower view of what you can react to. And so when you're slowing down, you're now able to see more of the roadway context. And so those are all things that we can speak to what the reasoning behind it. And I think that'll make maybe more resonate with people more than statistics.
Mm-hmm. Brad, when you're working with city leaders and assembly members, what are the conversations about how to address these really urgent problems?
The main conversation that where I always like to steer things is what we call the safe system approach. It's a approach that over the last few years, Federal Highways, USDOT has developed that has a few key principles that are the basis. And a few of those are things like death is not acceptable, and death or serious injuries are not acceptable. Humans make mistakes. Humans are vulnerable. Safety is proactive. Redundancy is crucial, and responsibility is shared. Having that common set of principles that we're acting from is key. And it's something we hope the public also will join us with those same sentiments of this is not an acceptable situation where we have so many fatalities. And so having that conversation and be on the same page with elected officials, the mayor, assembly members, I feel like we are all there. And with DOT and the municipality, we're also there. It doesn't mean that it's going to go away, that it is going to be zero right now, but it means that we're not complacent, we're not just throwing up our hands and not doing anything, but there's things that all of us can do. So there's things that the assembly can do. When they asked us to put together a report telling things what we were going to do, that was a fantastic action by the assembly to be able to come and ask those questions. It gave us a situation where we could then respond. It's so much easier to respond to questions because we know people then have formulated the thought. And so when we tell them, it's got a ready audience versus us trying to interject ideas when there's not a question. So that was fantastic. On the mayor's side, she's expressed a strong commitment to addressing this and putting staff in place and resources, and that's been really, really helpful. And then there's things that we do as designers, looking at how do we redesign our system. How do we do some of these lane reductions like we're talking about? There are lots of conversations. Even just yesterday, I had a couple-hour conversation with the city maintenance staff talking about snow maintenance on pedestrian facilities and trying to understand what all the different players do, because their Parks and Rec does things and street maintenance does things, and trying to integrate all of that and figure out what do we need to do to have the resources to be able to do things differently and better. And so there's all those efforts in the works to be able to address it. And so trying to make progress with small wins that we can now, and also set things up for future success, is a lot of what the conversations are.
When would the two of you as engineers say that the thinking really started to shift for highway designers? Because for, as we know, many decades, the whole idea was, how do we get cars faster, you know, through, around cities or right through them, and let's build these massive transportation corridors to move vehicles. There was no thought about individual people. It was all about cars and moving vehicles efficiently and quickly. How long has this thinking been around to really start to reframe the idea, as you said, that all users on the roads, and to change that thinking?
So, I mean, that's been there. There have been community uprisings against highway expansion through neighborhoods really since the 60s and urban renewal. People were fighting against those. So I would give credit to some of those people in urban centers that were trying very hard not to have this happen through their community. And they continue now with the Reconnecting Communities grant opportunity through USDOT to win back some of their community. So that has been there all along. Through our profession, I would say the Vision Zero goal has started in Sweden and has progressed across the United States. And now for the first time, we have a USDOT that has taken that as their goal. So that just happened within the last few years. And so that, with our funding partner as a Federal Highway Administration, making the case through the Safe Systems approach, that has offered our industry nationally to the flexibility to make those decisions and to reimagine that space. And I would say that you know, this is going to take a while. It's a paradigm shift that is happening. And the pandemic, I think, was a time where people started reimagining public space and the value of being outside. We have a beautiful community here. We have beautiful greenways, and that is a value to everyone. And so people should have that ability to get there safely and with dignity.
Mm-hmm. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Anna Boson, State Traffic and Safety Engineer for the Department of Transportation for the Central Region, Brad Coy, Anchorage Traffic Engineer, and Alexa Dobson, Executive Director of Bike Anchorage, as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Sandy says she lives in Fairbanks and says, thank goodness. But she visits Anchorage twice a year for a week. She says, tailgating and speeding are bad everywhere, but the worst instance was at Piper and Tudor Light when a driver behind me was honking furiously for me to turn right off Piper, in spite of the fact that both a pedestrian and bicyclist were legally in the crosswalk right in front of me. Fortunately for them, she writes, I ignored him. That's one of those classic examples of, wow, if somebody would have, you know, panicked or been looking at their phone and looked up and heard the horn honk and hit their gas, we would have had an accident. Alexa, is this a common scenario?
Yeah, I don't think you'll find anybody who can disagree that we have some really aggressive drivers. I think that whether you drive, whether you walk or bike, we've all had those experiences. And I think that really speaks to the type of transportation culture that we've inculcated, you know, over the decades, you know, the sense that you get in your car and you're going to proceed completely unimpeded to where you're going. You know, we kind of get out of that habit of being present and paying attention and thinking about how we're affecting other folks. And I think that goes back to something that Anna mentioned earlier, which is that, you know, of these folks who experienced car crashes earlier this year, nobody went out thinking, I'm going to go hit a pedestrian. Nobody expects that it's going to happen to them, but then your number gets pulled and, you know. And that's really why we're so focused on the design of the roads. From Bike Anchorage's perspective, sure, we can have more law enforcement. That's great, that sort of thing. But what we really want to see isn't necessarily that we're, you know, ticketing more drivers, but that drivers are doing fewer things that would require those tickets, if that makes sense. So if we can design roads that are actually going to make it the intuitive thing, the logical thing to do, to drive slowly, to drive safely, to pay closer attention, then we're going to prevent those problems before they even start. It really does come down to the messages that we're receiving from all around us in the environment. And if the road is built in a way that says this is for cars and cars only, and you're going to go fast, that's what people are going to do. We're responding to the environment and we're doing what it's telling us to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Bobby is in Anchorage. Hello.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Did you have a question?
Good. Well, I was just going to add a comment to this. This is something near and dear to my heart. If there was anybody from my work listening to this, they'd probably be laughing right now because this is something I talk about at work every single day to the point where I think a lot of those guys are tired of hearing about it. But I couldn't agree more with what you guys are saying about needing to do something about the roads. I live here in Anchorage, have for 25 years, and it has gotten terrible driving. I think it's going to require, as you guys, I'm probably preaching to the choir, but it's going to require a multi-layer, multi-pronged approach. There's certain people that are going to respond well to the re-engineered roads and all that, and some that won't, that will only respond well to enforcement antecedents and such. And I think we need to have a real conversation about maybe changing some of our laws, like when you go to renew your driver's license every 5 years, what they do, or at least what I've been exposed to, is I get put my face in the box and read the letters off. And if I read the letters right, they give me my license and I go about my business. I know there's some magic that happens behind the scene, but that's pretty much it. I think maybe implementing a practical, like you do when you get your initial driver's license, because I think there's a lot of people that have been driving for a really, really long time that have developed real poor habits that lead to these accidents and not stopping when they should or using indicators, and all this leads to accidents, that don't even realize they have these bad habits because they've been doing it for so long. It's just normalized now. Mm. So I agree with everything you guys are saying, and I would love to, I don't know if Anna or I don't even know who to contact, but I would like to get involved with trying to help out with some of this stuff if possible.
Oh, I see someone very eager to help you do that. Alexa.
Yeah, we would love to have you get involved with Bike Anchorage. That's exactly the type of voice that we need. Thank you so much.
Who is a good contact in Anchorage?
Well, that would be me. My name's Alexa. I'm the executive director of Bike Anchorage.
And
so,
we'll have links. Bobby, we'll put links on our web host at alaskapublic.org to this program, Talk of Alaska, and links to Bike Anchorage and some of the materials that Brad and Anna have also put forward. Brad, you want to follow up there?
Yeah, I would also suggest you reach out to your assembly member that represents you. They'll be able to see opportunities for you to weigh in and be involved. There are times when these discussions come before the assembly or in other meetings where being able to have public voice stand up and give testimony is helpful. So there could be opportunities there as well.
Mm-hmm. And Anna?
Yeah, and to jump on all of this, because we're all excited about having people involved in this, we do have a website, dot.alaska.gov/be-safe, and that's a resource for people in the community across Alaska to submit safety concerns mm-hmm. in their neighborhood and in where they frequent for traveling. But also, we are going to community council meetings over the next couple months to talk about this. So we'd love to have you join us there, Brad.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Bobby, for the call. And now we're going to go to Nate, who is also in Anchorage. Hello, Nate.
Hey there. Yeah. So I'm the program director at the Alaska Center for the Blind. And, you know, our goal is to help Alaskans, you know, regain their independence. So part of that is being able to get outside of their homes and travel safely, whether it's on the sidewalks or on the buses. And, you know, right now we're seeing this limitation, you know, as soon as the snow falls, that becomes almost impossible to get out here safely. My orientation and mobility, which is a cane instructor, took me out to the corner the other day on Taft and Spinard. That's McKinley Taft. And, you know, on both sides, there's these barricades of ice, probably anywhere from 4 to 5 foot high. And I'm blind myself, so I had to ramble up precariously just to get to the traffic signal. And she said, so this is pretty much would be expert level if we were to train someone. And I said, yes, it's advanced. And so the average person coming in here who's experiencing vision loss, you know, they're not going to be able to have that type of training, let alone mobility.
Right.
You know, it's the idea of we do want form to follow function. We want people to get out here on the sidewalks, be able to get to a cleared bus stop. And then you have like this other part of it, where is it the PTAB, is it the DOT, is it the municipality, who's maintaining this? And to move to that labyrinth is also challenging. And then it's, you know, it's just having that experience where we incentivize people get outside, walking for recreation or work in the bus. And when it's like a third world country out here, it takes that away. And it also creates like this negative connotation. If you're walking or you're seen walking, you're either, you know, disabled or you're impoverished and you can't afford a car, or else why would you be out here on these terrible, dangerous sidewalks? Mm. So those are some of my thoughts.
Yeah. Thank you, Nate, for the call. Such important points about, you know, it's, if you are able to get around with good vision and good mobility, that's fantastic. But a lot of folks have those struggles, and we need to be thinking about that. I want to stay with the phones for just a moment. Let's go to Steve, who is also in Anchorage. Hello, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Hey, what I would like everybody to do that's in this group to go over to the post office across from the Aurora shopping center on Northern Lights, sort of on the Minnesota, around 11:15 to 11:45 on a school day. Watch the number of kids crossing the street. I happen to be sitting there waiting for somebody and a good group going by. None of them went down to use the elevated crosswalk and cross safely. They all jaywalked. You can't engineer away stupidity. And if the young aren't educated, it's going to be a hard road to get them thinking again. People take a lot of things for granted. My high school librarian was sister to Katherine Hepburn. And she was and noted that she says, flashing lights on a school bus might not be that great of a thing, because kids crossing automatically think the lights are flashing and I can cross, instead of learning to stop and look.
Mm. I see your point there, Steve, about kids being too confident in just the lights and thinking, well, people will stop. I want to give our guests an opportunity to respond here to this, because I saw them all nodding and taking notes. So who wants to start here? Alexa, do you want to start?
Yeah, so I think that kind of the perspective we're hearing now is a really great example of how we got in the position that we're in right now. You know, if we treat traffic violence as a force of nature, if we treat the idea that cars are dangerous, drivers aren't paying attention, and that's just something that you have to know and you have to address your life around, then we're not going to be thinking about how we can practically solve those problems. This isn't something like the weather that we're powerless to change. Drivers don't have to be distracted. Drivers don't have to be speeding. And again, going back to this idea that roads are not for cars, roads are for people. You know, I think that the area that we're talking about here, where we have a grocery store, we have a middle school, we have a post office, we have a very popular shopping center, and we have an anti-pedestrian barrier running right down the middle. You know, on Minnesota there between Northern Lights and Benson, this is an area where people have a lot of really good reasons to be walking or biking, and people have a lot of really good reasons to be crossing the street. That is what streets are for, so that you can get to where you're going. So what we want to think about is not just creating, you know, these narrow little channels where you're designating pedestrians can go, when we know that drivers, as they stand right now, often don't respect those places to begin with. And instead, we need to be thinking fundamentally differently about how roads can be safe for everyone. Because kids are not crossing streets because they're stupid. Kids are crossing streets because they need to get from here to there. And, you know, it's funny when we talk about slowing down drivers and that sort of thing, people protest, oh, I can't possibly slow down. You want me to go slower? What? I'm going to get there you know, a minute slower than I would have otherwise. And then, you know, you think about what we're asking pedestrians to do, going half a mile out of their way to go to the designated crosswalks. It doesn't make sense. So really what we want to do is reframe this conversation away from, you know, cars are inherently dangerous and they are inherently going to be going fast and you have to expect that you're going to get hit, to let's talk about how we can change driver behavior.
Brad or Anna, do you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the location, and I want to tie it also to the previous caller who is visually impaired. And so there's a transit stop on the one side of the road there, and the later gentleman asked that, you know, kids should use the overhead crossing. That has stairs. There's you know, so that's a mobility concern as it is. It is not a legal, or it's not an ADA accessible sure. route. If you are a woman, it can be creepy. And so, you know, you want to be visually seen. And so it's not exactly an enticing opportunity. And then the school behind it has a trail that leads right to it. So if you're a child, you're going to use that trail with your friends versus going to a 45 mile an hour Minnesota drive. Mm.
We need to take another short break. When we come back, we'll pick up more calls and questions about roadway safety as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Corey is a transportation planner with Fast Planning in Fairbanks. Corey says, hello, I'm excited to hear this conversation happening. Pedestrian and non-motorized safety is so important in Alaska, where environmental factors complicate our infrastructure. She says, they have a question for the trio here. DOT, Department of Transportation, has discussed its tools to predict future traffic increases. And there's a lot of focus on justifying decisions, design decisions around prioritizing cars. You were just talking about that. But what about other modes? How is data collected, and is there predictive modeling for non-motorized users? Is level of service for people outside of vehicles measured? What planning considerations do they receive for increased uses, and how is their accommodation supported or suppressed at the design level? That's a lot of questions. Brad?
Yeah, I can dive into some of that. As we think about, well, I guess I want to caution thinking about non-motorized users in the same simplistic way that we do vehicles. It's pretty easy to have number of vehicles and design a system based on performance metrics that have to do with how vehicles operate. And pedestrians and bicyclists are quite a bit different. We're not at that point yet where we have high enough volumes that we can design or should design for volumes. Rather, a better way to think about it is to think about the safety and the gaps in our network, where there's places that, you know, you might have 3-4 miles of great trails and you have then a mile of no access, no way to get where you're trying to go. And so that can deter and prevent being able to get where you need to go. So I can see kind of where that thought process is of trying to have metrics, because when you have metrics, you might have other incentives to provide the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Anna.
And I would just also say that we want to have a system that is all ages, all abilities. And so, you know, that is not the case for driving, right? You have to have a certain, it's a privilege, right, to have a car and to mm-hmm. have a driver's license and all those things. And about 30% of our population does not, for whatever reason, whether that's age, whether that's ability.
Does not have a license?
Does not.
30% of that's people
national.
On the roads?
No, 30% of
the population. Okay. Thank you
and
for
that's
that
a national. And that's a national statistic. And so we can assume that that is the same here, maybe even more so for different areas of the state. And so you know, all ages, all abilities, and that comfort. So you can think about children being able to navigate their neighborhoods and that kind of thing. So again, I would also agree with Brad to not focus too much on the data, because it might change too, and we really want to have the infrastructure match the land use around mm. it, and to be something that supports development and land use that the community wants.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Donna is in Eagle River. Hello, Donna.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. Did you have a question?
I just, my biggest pet peeve about driving is people have their bright lights on all the time and I can't see. It blinds me. It keeps me from driving at night, to be honest with you.
Mm.
Because when they shine their bright lights in my eyes, I am blinded. Don't have your brights on all the time.
Thank you, Donna, for the call. Alexa, we talked a little bit about this during the break because I saw the comment on the air and or on the screen here, and you had thoughts about that it might be the new design of headlights.
Yeah, there are definitely some changes to the way that cars are being designed and built that are changing safety both for other drivers and also for bikes and pedestrians. So, yeah, some of those newer halogen headlights are just really, really bright, and they're not actually bright. They're just, that's just the way they are.
Just irritating.
And the way that cars are being manufactured these days, you know, we're seeing a lot more big trucks, a lot more big SUVs. They are taller. They have more vertical grills. So kind of to our caller's comment, you know, you're going to have those lights mounted at a higher level. And the other thing that does when you have a bigger, heavier vehicle with a vertical grill like that is they have bigger blind spots. They are heavier. And if they hit a pedestrian or a bicyclist or even another car, they're causing a lot more damage because there's just a lot more force that's happening there. So there are a lot of changes in the ways that just cars are being built these days that are contributing to these problems.
All right, Donna, thank you. Take care out there on the roads. I agree that sometimes the lights are, it's really hard to see when you're driving at night in the dark. Let's go to Bill in Fairbanks. Hello, Bill. Bill?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, just getting my phone set. Yeah, I'm from Fairbanks, but I spent a lot of time in Massachusetts. And a year ago, signs started showing up all over the state saying that you need to give bicycles 4 feet when you're passing them. And it's really starting to change behavior. I see cars backed up behind bicyclists on the roads that we have. And by the way, in Massachusetts, the roads are very narrow all over the state, and trees grow right up to the pavement. So you'll find trees that have white crosses on them for where cars have hit them. But anyway, I don't know exactly how this could help here, but it might give some ideas. Just having a statewide law, making sure that people have to give bicycles 4 feet before they pass.
All right. Well, thank you, Bill, for the something to think about. I'm going to go to an email here from Bree, who says, I'm trained as an environmental psychologist. I study how the built environment and individuals interact with one another. So I understand that while the design of the road matters, the design of the city right next to the road in some ways matters even more. Drivers' behavior will shift if they see pedestrians and bikers in a more dense area. The way that Anchorage is currently designed is parking lots are what front most sidewalks and streets. But if buildings and more people were closer to the road, drivers would likely slow down because that's what the environment is telling them to do. Bree says, I'd also like to mention the Right to the City movement that is prevalent in places like Bogota and Copenhagen, where government officials led by mayors recognize that walkers and bikers have the same right to the city streets as drivers, especially given that those that ride and bike may not have access or can afford cars. So what you're discussing today is actually a mobility equity issue, and that's how I would like to better center the conversation in Alaska. I would say that that's exactly what you're advocating for too, right, Alexa?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to put it. And I've kind of been thinking about this sort of chicken and egg situation from one of our earlier callers talking about, you know, making it a little bit of a higher standard to have a driver's license and things like that, and how the objection to that is, what, but I need a car to get around, right? So we've kind of created this situation where driving is mandatory, and then, you know, you don't have the mechanism to make sure that people are driving as safely as we want them to. So the other side of that, thinking about, you know, is it even practical to get from point A to point B? Can I walk to work? Can I walk to school? Can I walk to a grocery store? Is there infrastructure for me to be able to get on my bike and go where I need to go? These things all are really interrelated, and I absolutely think that a big part of what we struggle with is that we have you know, not as many people out walking and biking as we would like to make it feel like a normal part of the day for drivers.
Yes, please pick it up there.
So one reason why I bike commute daily, even through the winter, is because it has given me a better understanding of how our system's working for all the different users. So when I'm at home with my family, we're usually driving places just because of where we live. They do bike and walk to school, but when I go to work, I bike, and then I bike to meetings, and it has given me a such better feel for the network. And my vision is that I would love Anchorage to be a place that you could bike and walk, take transit, or drive wherever you wanted to get to. I think we've got the driving part with good access to all the city, but the other ones aren't quite there. And so how do we get there? It is going to take a different way of thinking, but I believe that we are going to be making progress, and we are making progress.
I'm going to go to you in a minute here, Anna, but I want to pick up on this email that we got. This is from Amelia and Steve. It says, we live in Sitka, so not faced with heavy traffic every day. On our occasional visits to Anchorage, we're immediately confronted by the way too many people drive there, fast, aggressive, and lacking consideration for anyone not in a vehicle. We have a few of those folks here, too. The snow buildup on some sidewalks in the winter leaves little choice but to walk along the side of the road. We try to do our walking using the parks. Wanted to mention, and this is an important point, that there is also a responsibility on walkers to wear something that is visible or to carry a light. And I know that someone stopped me one day when I was with my dog, she's got a black coat. I had a dark coat on, and a lady stopped and said, I cannot see you or your dog because you're all dressed in dark. And I hadn't even thought about, oh my gosh, I'm creating my own hazard here. So I think that's a good suggestion too, is make sure you're seen by people. Anna, final thoughts here in our last minute.
Yeah, I would say to the person who asked about equity, the data shown nationally and here in Anchorage is that it is disproportionately harming communities that are disadvantaged. And so there is an EPA Justice 40 tool that can do some screening using census data on, and then we overlay that with our crash data. But nationally, you know, Black and Indigenous people are disproportionately harmed that in their communities and as the victims of fatal crashes over, you know, white community members. And so that has to do with the decisions of the past on, like I mentioned earlier, urban renewal and building faster roads in disadvantaged neighborhoods and communities, and then the lack of facilities perhaps on reservations and in isolated communities here in Alaska. We don't have lighting. We don't have separated facilities for them, and yet car ownership is probably very low.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you all. This hour went by really fast, as it always does. But thank you, Anna Boson, State Traffic and Safety Engineer for the Central Region of Alaska for the State Department of Transportation. Brad Coy is the Anchorage Traffic Engineer, and Alexa Dobson is the Executive Director of Bike Anchorage. Thanks to Chris Hyde, our engineer today, and our producer, Madeline Rose. On the phones, Tobin Shelby helped us out. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.